Let's call the House Finance meeting to order.
It seems like we were just here. We were. Welcome back, everybody.
But no PPD to PPT this afternoon. We're going to take up bills.
Today is it's April 6th, time is 1:45. For the record, we have Representative Moses, Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, Co-Chairman Schnault, myself, Co-Chairman Meyer, Vice Chairman Schultz, Representative Petula, Representative Jewell, and Representative Wyra. Today we hope to get through four bills. A couple of these we have started and did not get finished, so we'll start with those. That would be House Bill 307, the Kinnick River Public Use Area, House Bill 493, the School Construction Bond Reimbursement, two new ones, House for HCR 30, Alaska Climate Impact Assessment Commission. I believe that's Representative Jewell's bill. And House Bill 105, Medicaid for Adult Dental, which is a governor's bill, but I believe Representative Hawker is going to be bringing that forward. We'll see when we get there. Okay. Representative Hawker is here, by the way, for the record. So let's go ahead and go to House Bill 307, Kinnick River Public Use. And where we left off, we were taking public testimony, and my understanding, we have a couple off net. We have some in Anchorage, some in the Mat-Su Valley, and one here in Juneau. So let's start here in Juneau. Is there a Robert Howard? Want to join us? And for the record, tell us your name and affiliation, please. Welcome.
I'm Robert Howard, and I'm here representing Friends of Butte residents. Good afternoon. I've raised my family in the Matanuska Valley, always appreciative of the natural attributes. Thank you, Representative Stoltz, for all the work, and all of you for the recent improvements to HB 307. There's room for many recreational endeavors in the Kinnick Basin. Much of our enjoyment has been via motorized activities. We also have two decades of serious advocating and committing of resources to responsible use. Kindly share the image enlargements. I've served with the Mat-Su Borough Trails Committee and the Mat-Su Trails Council. As a founding member of the Kinnick River Watershed Group, I was among those approaching Representative Stoltz for solutions to the headline-making abuses in the Kinnick area. I believe there's a better way to do this. A state recreation area will provide a better vehicle. The problems are too deep and diverse to handle without a firmer base. Recognizing existing off-road motorized trails is troubling language. A DNR official, Representative Stoltz, and an FNG representative, and Mat-Su Borough Trails person, traveled to the end of Rippey Trail beyond Jim Lake. Ask about the extent of their examination at the Butte Community Council meeting. It was declared all the way to the end. In fact, miles of superb habitat are traversed by a single track beyond what the ATVs have expanded and claim as traditional. A prime example of different perceptions. An area accessible to more than 300,000 people and riddled with trails receives undeniable impacts. National Guard cleanups are now the tradition. We need a management plan with room for science and a citizens advisory board, such as the successful Kenai Special Management Area model. Bill sponsors canceled their last hearing, but many felt that hearings should have also happened in Anchorage. The concerns of residents need addressed as well. Where's mention of the sorely needed sanitary facilities? Proposed enforcement has risen to mirror that provided in the state recreation area. Why not graduate to that level, allowing structure for economic success? We must ask why existing plan recommendations, from the Susitna plan to the latest Mat-Su Borough Butte Asset Management Plan, for which I guided planners into the field, are disregarded. HB 307 needs stated deadlines. Governor Murkowski wants to improve Alaska's image. Major motion pictures have been filmed in the Kinect, including Star Trek VI, and others coming. Help us reach the potential in this watershed where the swans arrive earliest and leave latest. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Howard, any questions? None. Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay. Is there anyone else here in Juneau, since we're here, that would like to testify? Okay, seeing none, then let's go off net and go to Carrie Gray Wolf.
Hello?
Hello,
Carrie. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. My name is Carrie Gray Wolf. I am a South Kinect River resident and wildlife biologist. I oppose HB 7. Several supporters of this bill have told me to move if you don't like it. How unfortunate that my rights as a local homeowner and recreational user are discounted by another. But sadly enough, I do have the option to leave if human disturbances continue to escalate. However, swans, waterfowl, and many other bird species do not have that option. Birds migrate, rest, feed, mate, and nest in the Kinnick River Valley. The valley is part of a critical and historical migration route, a route used long before recreational activities became a favorite pastime. It is the first and last stopover on a long migration to and from Prince William Sound. The wetlands within the Kinnick River Valley have been designated as an important bird area of statewide significance and nominated for global significance. Bird watching is a multi-billion dollar business. Birders will travel to this area of significance, but not if the critical habitat is further destroyed by excessive target shooting and off-road vehicle use. The commissioner should be allowed to restrict the types of weapons and shot used and to regulate time of discharge in and adjacent to wetland areas. Birds and fish, and therefore humans, are at greater risk to lead poisoning from unwarranted target shooting. The federal government has required waterfowl hunters to use steel shot for years. It is time for target shooters to be held responsible. HB 307 grandfathers in existing trails, allows for motorized use in critical nesting habitat, and promotes increased use before allowing managers to assess the current situation and recommend appropriate management plans. This bill prohibits the regulation of destructive, incompatible uses before a management plan is even in place. Please help to write a bill that will address these and other inadequacies. In conclusion, I support the creation of a state recreational area or game refuge due to the high value of wildlife habitat. But no matter how the area is designated, please allocate sufficient funding to provide for enforcement, education, habitat protection, sanitary facilities, and trail maintenance. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Carrie, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? So we'll go on now to, Cecilia Fritz?
Cecily Fritz,
sorry.
Yes, it's Cecily.
Yes, Cecily.
Hi. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, hi. I'm with the Kinnick River Watershed Group. Folks have been working for years to get management in the Kinnick River Valley with little agreement on how it should happen. Thanks to Representative Stoltz, we are at the cusp of realizing something good that will bring folks together, accommodate all users, and protect resources in this awesome area. We need effective enforcement. Representative Stoltz, can you help us all understand today when and how enforcement will happen via this bill and the fiscal note? Also, we need consideration for the deteriorating quality of residents' lives due to the high use and multiple access points next to homes. While this may complicate and add to the cost of planning, we ask this committee to amend page 2, section 4123190 to include a citizens' advisory board. Public hearings won't sufficiently address these complex issues as use and population increase. Also, on page 3, lines 13 through 18, it does not allow management of that spider web of trails near residential areas, the 6-foot-deep trails in the dunes, or consideration for motorized use in the upland trail during hunting and winter seasons, and non-motorized use in the warm seasons when the trail is soft and easily disturbed. where swans are already present near the trail. Sheep and moose give birth, salmon spawn, and the alpine woodland and wetland terrain come together. Please amend this section. On line 13, begin the sentence with as compatible with the purposes in 4123180, and end the section and this sentence after the word area on line 14. Our group is doing multifaceted fieldwork and data compilation through a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grant in the Connect River Valley now. With good legislation to serve as the foundation, we stand ready to work with agencies more, doing more grant writing and fieldwork. Please help us get to that point. Thank you, Representative Stoltz, very, very much, and thank you, committee, for your consideration.
All right, thank you, Ms. Fritz, for your testimony. I don't see any questions.
Could I just have her repeat the language that she was suggesting? It was something at the beginning. I think I caught the beginning on page 3 at line 13. It was, I think, recognizing the previous statute, the 180, but I didn't catch the rest of it. Could you say that again?
Yes, I suggested to start that sentence on line 13 with the word, the phrase as compatible with the purposes identified in 41.23.180, and then end that sentence after, and the entire section for that matter, after the word area on line 14.
So, I'm sorry, the very end of it was, what were the last words in the sentence then?
The last word in that sentence would be area.
Line 14.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, Ms. Fritz. All right, let's go on then to, looks like, Anchorage. And we have Eric.
Good afternoon, House Finance Committee. My name is Eric Udy. I'm here representing Alaska Center for the Environment. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on HB 307. We are opposed to HB 307. I first must start off by saying that ACE is in support of closely managed OHV access. Unfortunately, HB 307 does little to nothing to manage these activities. Although we commend Representative Stoltz for attempting to address the problems of the Connect River watershed, HB 307's public use area designation may cause more problems than it solves. ACE would recommend a recreation area management style for the Connect. Many past planning efforts, as Robert Howard has commented on, have recommended that the Connect be managed as a recreation area. Take, for instance, the Susitna Area Plan of 85, or the BLM, which manages adjacent lands, about 80,000 acres adjacent to this area, they're recommending a similar recreation area for their lands. The Connect River is notorious for being a dangerous and lawless place. 307 would fail to tackle the problems that have plagued the area for years. The bill does not keep OHVs on proper trails, curb the dangerous use of guns, or support any immediate on-the-ground enforcement. Furthermore, 307 severely limits the Commissioner of DNR the authority to stop damage to resources caused by OHVs. 307 allows for the grandfathering of all existing trails. This section should be completely deleted. We believe that the planning process is the best place to address trail issues as a concern to critical habitat areas. We would also recommend that a citizens advisory board be established to complement DNR's ongoing management of the area. This would give several different users a voice in management. In any event, proper funding is really the key for this Connect area. The area has no public facilities, no toilets, not one trash can. Finally, I'd like to address enforcement. I believe that this is one point on which all sides can agree on. In the fiscal note, we see monies for planning and implementation of the plan. We even see $36,000 for a survey, which, by the way, I think results would be skewed, not really be representative of all users, because non-motorized users have been displaced from the area. So I guess I'm saying please fund on-the-ground enforcement of the Connect River watershed. Enforcement is what is needed most. In conclusion, we think that it is a bad idea to try and legislate the problems of the CNIC. Instead, allow professionals to get on the ground, work with the public, work with the locals, to establish different uses for the management area. Until this bill does this, it will be no solution to the dilemma, but in fact part of the problem. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony, Eric. Don't see any questions, so let's go on now to Todd Clark.
Good afternoon, Finances Committee. This is Todd Clark, and I'm representing the Alaska Outdoor Actors Alliance. We represent a large number of users in that area, and the represented groups equal literally thousands of members. Our goal is to maximize the legitimate use of these public resources, and we feel that in South Central Alaska there needs to be a place that's designated as a destination for motorized vehicles. I think it's fair to say that each year the members that we represent literally put in hundreds of hours of volunteer time dealing with these cars and vandalism and trash and cleanups and have worked with the National Guard to help pull those hulks out. And we are well aware of the problems out there. And I think it's also fair to say that the members are very much interested in a better solution than spending hundreds of hours out there. The idea of management, the idea of enforcement, and the idea of education are all appealing. The problem that the members have with management is typically they have a hard time getting behind it because usually it results in restrictions to the access that they already have. We see HB 307 as a vehicle that allows us to get behind the idea of management, enforcement, and education without throwing out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. Without the protections for the existing uses out there, all the existing uses, we would probably lose the support for most of our member base for this legislation. HB 307 helps us solve the problems, get ahead of the problem, and you know, we feel that, again, you know, backing up what most everybody has said, that enforcement is one of the very key issues. Also, education is. If you took a poll out there of all the people who know what the generally allowed uses are, speaking of the state's rules for trails and off-road vehicle use, most people wouldn't realize that they are not currently allowed by law to create new trails. They wouldn't realize that they're not currently allowed by law to tear the vegetative mat. Most of them don't know that. And I think we need a solution that, rather than kicking the motorized users out or limiting them, helps solve the problems, helps educate the users, and get them behind the idea of management. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
All right, well, that's a good story. I appreciate that. Just to let the audience know, having your cell phone ring during committee meeting can be costly. The last person that did that is the sound man right there, and he bought us donuts this morning. So if your cell phone goes off, that means donuts.
Eddie, was that yours that went off earlier? Or
the gentleman behind you there? Was
Mike Ford.
Eddie Jean. Mike Ford.
I think it was Mr. Ford. But if Eddie, if you want to bring donuts, that's fine too. Yeah.
Okay, we'll continue the testimony here. That concludes Anchorage, I believe. And we'll now go to Palmer. Patty Barber.
Yes, my name is Patty Barber, and I live in the Butte area. Thank you for allowing me to speak on House Bill 307, and thank you, Representative Stoltz, for writing and introducing the bill. This past weekend, we had a booth at the Wassail Outdoorsman Show and asked people how they felt about the issues at Jim Creek. Many people said that they were glad something is being done to protect the motorized user and had concerns about the junk car burnings. That has been a major problem with the area and the lack of enforcement presence. We hope that there will be funding for troopers or some form of enforcement to patrol occasionally or on the high-use weekends. Thank you again for the chance to speak on this bill.
All right. Thank you, Patty. Okay, now let's go to Ken. Ken Barber.
Yeah, my name is Kenny Barber, and I'd like to thank Representative Stoltz for introducing this bill, and I do support this bill 100%. And I don't think there needs to be any more changes to this bill. It's already been a problem for people like me to go up there and trap and do the things that I do. And some of the, you know, I listen to these people all complain about bird watching, and I'm not a guy who has anything against bird watchers or anything like that. But, you know, we have the hay flat that was created for that. It got bigger this year or the year before last, I can't recall which, but it's already getting bigger. It's already taking up more area, and it's really restricting to me, people like me. So I think this bill is needed, and I think enforcement is the best part of this bill, and we need to get that in there and establish the money and the funding for enforcement on this, on that Connecticut River area. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Barber. Just to let you know, Representative Stoltz's cell phone just went off as you were speaking, so he's offered to bring cookies. Okay, Mr. Kautz. Dick, is it Dick Kautz?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Dick Kautz. I'm a 42-year resident of the Butte area. I would like to thank Representative Stoltz and Senator Huggins for House Bill 307 and Senate Bill 197, which I am behind 100%. We need a public use area designation for the Connecticut River Valley. We need to preserve our traditions and rural lifestyles, which includes off-road travel in the unimproved areas of the Connecticut River Valley. Hunting, fishing, trapping, prospecting, and all-terrain vehicle recreation is a traditional lifestyle for many residents here in the Butte area and other residents of Alaska. For those people who don't like motorized vehicles, there is a 500,000-acre Chugach State Park nearby, along with millions of acres of national parks and designated wilderness areas in other parts of Alaska. Tourism is also a choice of economic viability for many people here in the Butte area. Many tourists enjoy traveling up the Kinnick River by four-wheeler, swamp buggies, and airboats by tour companies in order to enjoy a rustic experience as an alternate to the fancy princess tours. There are several businesses here that engage in taking visitors for trips up the Kinnick River. Having a public use designation is a good deal for everybody. We will have DNR management, access for traditional use, access for tourists, and all of the existing protection for fish, game, and habitat will still be in place. Hopefully in the future there will be additional funding for law enforcement in order to curtail some of the activities that have given the area a bad name. We don't believe that a lot of new restrictions and or closures should be implemented to punish all users for the action of a few. There are approximately 72 public agencies, sub-agencies, plans, and federal protection acts that have regulations in place already that apply to the public lands in question and form the basis for an infrastructure for management and regulation of the Kinnick River public use area. And I don't have time to read all 72, but I'll be glad to fax you the list. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kautz. Kautz? I'm sorry, how'd you say?
Kautz.
Kautz?
Kautz.
Kautz. Okay. If you want to fax that to us, that would be great. I don't know if do they have the fax number there at the LIO?
They should have it there.
I realize I've got it here, but okay. Okay, you should have it there at the LIO, and that if you fax that to us, then we'll get it to the various committee members. Okay, so is there anyone else in Palmer?
Or Wasilla.
Anyone else on? Anyone else online that wants to testify? Anyone else here in
Joe?
Yes.
It's going to be appropriate to have Mr. Miley as the lands director, land water, to kind of wrap things together and probably answer some of the technical questions for committee members, if it's at your pleasure.
Yeah, that sounds good. Mr. Miles, are you here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am on the phone here.
Oh, okay, I thought you were in general. Okay, very good. Do you have any comments on the On the House bill here, I understand there is a Senate bill companion, which I'm assuming is the same. So go ahead, Mr. Meyer.
Used to be the same.
Representative Meyer, I'll just be brief and just to say that DNR has worked closely with Representative Stoltz and Senator Huggins on the Kinnick Public Use Area legislation. There's been a lot of changes made to the legislation, which we think are all good changes. The legislation sets aside 264,000 acres as a public use area. I think you've heard from most people there's general support for doing something out there. We feel that the management plan, which is required by the plan, is a good way to get at a lot of the issues that people are raising about, you know, what trails are should be used for what kinds of things and what sort of facilities need to be out there. That's exactly the kind of thing that we envision dealing with through a management plan. And the other key provision of the bill is that it actually gives DNR some enforcement authority, or it's more than just DNR. It gives anybody who has enforcement authority, such as the troopers, the authority to actually cite people for violations. Right now, if somebody violates the rules that we have for state lands, our enforcement mechanism is simply to take a picture of it, send it to the AG's office, and ask him to send a nasty letter to the person to tell him to stop it, which doesn't work particularly well if it's a violation that's occurring on the ground. And so that's the reason why we actually have enforcement authority in this bill. It would give DNR, or, like I say, even the troopers, more authority to regulate uses on state land. So I'm available to answer any sort of questions the committee may have on the bill.
I believe we do have a question.
Representative Stoltz?
Well, just not a question. I just want to thank the department for that language, and it's pretty broad and innovative and allowing a lot of different enforcement options, certainly a lot broader and a lot more comprehensive than I was able to come up with my own. It's a good direction, and just I'm also working on an amendment, if not now but later in the process, to allow other groups outside of government to provide resources, because there's a lot of folks interested in to help supply, have an avenue to supply resources to allow the department to accept private or organizational funds to help pay for enforcement costs, just to supplement what we, the extra work we're trying to do. That's just an aside. I just haven't finished drafting that. We're just working with the DPS commissioner, and he's had a few distractions, and that's an ongoing effort. Enforcement is one of my big concerns, and that's why when I was a freshman, I begged for the public safety budget, because this Butte area just has cried out for that, and far from being done. We've got extra resources there, and it's a continuing discussion with the DPS commissioner on the special type of targeted activity that we've talked about, and when you have troopers doing it, it makes other people more comfortable to do the citizen watch types of things, and it's not an overnight process. This area didn't become a big problem. Representative Cartula grew up near the area. She's seen it in its better days, and it wasn't an overnight problem. It's devolved into what we have right now. And I'll save the rest of my remarks for closing.
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to find a question or something.
But yeah.
Okay. Representative Cotillo, you have a question for Mr. Miles?
Yeah, I do. Thanks. Okay. And I want to thank Representative Stoltz for starting the process to clean up this area. The first thing, Dick, can you explain to me just a little bit about how the public process is going to work with the public use area? I mean, we heard mention the Citizen Advisory Board, but how does DNR, what are you going to do? How many public hearings? What's the process, just roughly?
Representative Cartula, through the chair, we would follow our standard planning process, which takes about 2 years. It involves the first step in the process is to hold some public meetings to identify issues and concerns and see who's interested in the project. With this one, we kind of already have done a lot of that. There were actually hearings held on the proposed legislation this summer, but I envision we would still hold some additional public meetings to be focused on the specific issues that the plan would deal with. Then we would gather data to deal with some of those issues, including one of the things we're looking at is doing a public survey to kind of get public opinions as to what folks that use the area or might use the area want to see happen out there. we'd gather information about, we'd talk to the user groups, for example, about what trails are out there right now and what different groups are using them. Then we would develop a draft plan, and we would hold public meetings on that draft plan. We actually might actually develop some alternatives before that and hold meetings on that, and then develop a draft plan, and then hold meetings on the draft plan, adopt a final plan. So it's basically usually three rounds of public meetings. I envision the public meetings would include probably meetings in the Butte and possibly in Anchorage or Eagle River. We haven't really sorted out exactly how many meetings would occur at each stage of the process, but it's a very open public process. The planning, we actually usually form a planning team, which includes the state agencies that are involved in land and resource management, as well as the borough would actually be an active participant in that, both because this is within the borough and also the borough owns some of the adjacent lands, so they would need to be an active player in that planning process.
If I might,
go ahead.
It's been my experience, especially here in Juneau, that, you know, there's a lot of time and effort put into the planning around this. If at some point during your process you feel that there's a need to have a little bit more formal group, or if you see that, you know, there's subcategories that might need to have that done, is that something that you're capable of doing without it being in statute to form, for instance, a stakeholder group, just so that you can be sure that the citizens there, I know by now it's pretty active, have that kind of direct input into the process?
Representative Tertullo, through the chair, yeah, we certainly can do that, and we have done that in past planning efforts, had some sort of group to kind of use as a sounding board for ideas and stuff. It has been, in some planning projects, there actually has been legislation that set up a formal advisory board. For example, the Susitna Valley Rec Rivers, and I think somebody mentioned Kenai River, and those groups are useful, but it adds both time and expense to the process to actually have a formal advisory group that's actually set up in statute.
Right, but it doesn't mean that you wouldn't do just about that, except that maybe they aren't pay per diem and it's not quite as formal a setting. But it sounds to me like you're at the point where you just about have to do that anyway. Am I right?
Representative Kutulis, through the chair, yeah, I think in this case, you know, we kind of know who the prime user groups are, and I think we would probably establish some sort of advisory group with, you know, members of some of the key groups.
Great. The second area I was interested in, and I agree with Representative Stoltz, that the enforcement section of this, I was just kind of taking a look at some of the other public use areas, and, I mean, it's a whole different story, but it looks like it's broader than we're normally seeing. And I just wanted to understand just a little bit who that encompasses. So that encompasses you. It would encompass, I mean, the DNR people. It would encompass, obviously, peace officers. Is that also covering fishing game, or is it, who can now go out and arrest or execute a warrant?
Representative Petrulli, through the chair, right now the only folks that actually can issue warrants would be people that are that, you know, like state troopers, which includes the fish and game folks, I guess it would include, like, state park rangers and so on. But, this, like you say, this authority actually gives the DNR employees the authority, if approved by the commissioner, to at least issue citations. It kind of depends on what the regulations are. We don't envision that DNR folks would have the status of, or mining land and water people would have the status of public safety officers or peace officers, but they would have the ability, you know, to write somebody a ticket, for example, if they're doing violating one of our regulations.
Right, and are you planning on getting out there as soon as you've got it done in regulation to really show that force of enforcement? I mean, I really agree with Representative Stoltz that one of the problems is it's gotten so far down the line that, you know, it seems like there needs to be that show of enforcement and commitment and people right on the ground so that some of this can be cleared up, or it's just going to, people won't take it seriously. I mean, is that your plan?
Representative Kutula, through the chair, yes. We actually, if you look at our fiscal note, we actually have long-term funding in there for a full-time position that would be devoted to managing that area. It may not necessarily be one person for the whole year, but it, because the use out there is somewhat seasonal, and so, it, you know, on weekends and things like that, when there's a lot of public use, we'd have probably have several people out there and at times when there isn't much going on, there wouldn't be a need for any sort of active presence. But we do envision actually having that person dedicated to working on the Kinnick Public Use area.
Okay, I just have two other areas, okay. And I'll try to be brief. Thanks. Just for the record and to kind of clear up for myself. The second to last question is, right now on the adjacent land with the BLM, how will the public use area interact with that? I mean, is the BLM land managed to a higher degree, or will this bring it up to pretty close? What's the situation there?
Representative Petula, through the chair, most of the BLM lands are throughout the valley and don't actually receive very much intensive public use, and I don't think there's a lot of field presence by BLM. The BLM actually used to have a few parcels that were closer to the road system, but most of those have been transferred to the state.
Okay, and finally, maybe the most important, in the section that talks about recognizing the existing off-road motor vehicle trails, it's on page 3 and it's lines 13 through 18. I kind of struggled with that because when I originally read it, I was taking that as grandfathering in the existing trails myself. But the more I thought about it, that doesn't seem to be what that's saying. And in talking about it with the sponsor, my understanding is that recognizing is simply a term that means that you consider it. You're going to recognize that they're there at this point, but that you're going to go and look at that and then make a decision that this is not a grandfather section. It does not guarantee that some of those trails, which obviously from the pictures and from what all of us have seen, some of those are not going to continue to exist. So am I reading that correctly for the record?
Representative Cachula, that is our understanding of what that recognize means. It's like you say, that we would go out there and inventory all those and consider them, but you know, some of those trails, for example, there's trails that probably go through fish spawning areas and things like that that need to either be rerouted or so on, and we believe that the current language gives us flexibility to deal with those kind of situations.
Right. If you find that some of those trails are obviously, as you say, crossing fish streams or creating more debilitation of the area, then you feel you have it within your authority to rehabilitate them and bring them back.
Representative Cartula, through the chair, yes, we do.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Cartula. Why don't we go ahead? Was there anybody else who wanted to testify, by the way, on this particular bill? Okay. Eddie? Want to testify? Okay. He's for the next.
He must get out of here quick for you. Mm-hmm. That's plenty more donuts.
Okay, let's go ahead and close public hearing on this bill. We do have an amendment. Amendment 1 by Representative Weirach. Go away.
Move Amendment 1.
Okay. Objection. Actually, explain it to us. Friendly objection.
It just says the commissioner can't prohibit hunting within a marine park unit of the park system. And not restrict it. You know, this came from, frankly, from Representative Cotula's bill that would have created a marine park in southeast Alaska. And while that, the subject of that bill really didn't fit here, I thought this provision would, and it seemed to relate to what we were trying to do with this area, although not elegantly, at least it's trying to get the intent across here and on some of these other marine parks. And that's why I talked with the sponsor of the bill about this amendment, asking me if we could just slide it in here.
All the way up. We do have some questions, Representative Kelly.
It looks as if, at first glance, you're restating the lower part of the existing wording, which says the commissioner may not restrict the exercise of fishing, hunting, or trapping rights permitted under law or regulation within a marine park of the Alaska states. How is what you're doing?
One has to do with restrict, and the other has to do with prohibit. Restrictions subsumed within prohibit. This one says you can't, flat out says you can't prohibit hunting.
How about fishing and trapping?
Well, it can't restrict the hunting or fishing, but this had to be more with to go after the idea of hunters more. I mean, it's just frankly a distinction between a rod and a gun.
But it now says, Mr. Chairman, it now says that you can't restrict the exercise of fishing, hunting, or trapping rights permitted under law or regulation. And there are all kinds of things that prohibit people from interfering with that and everything else in the book. And then as a fisherman and a trapper occasionally, this appears to lessen the ability of those folks somehow by being specific about hunting, but not including those other two rights that are up above.
Well, right now the law says the commissioner may not restrict the exercise of fishing, hunting, or trapping. This law doesn't change that at all. It just says you can't prohibit hunting within a marine park unit.
And
that's the
other two being left out, you may prohibit fishing and trapping?
Well, I arguably no, because that's a restriction.
So isn't it also a restriction for hunting? I'm just having trouble figuring out what this thing does, given the existing language about restricting lawful rights.
It says you can't prohibit hunting.
Read that.
That's all. Okay. Katona, maybe you can add something to this.
Well, I can add just one area of light here. The reason that the bill for the marine parks, which we're really interested in here, is the reason for this language was because territorial sportsmen and NRA had brought up the issue. We've never heard any concern about any of the fishing or the hunt or the trapping at all. I mean, I think that it's going along quite nicely, and I don't think there's really any problem with the hunting either. It's just that if we did get the designation for some more of the land, which many of the people in the area are really interested in, we just wanted it crystal clear because that issue had been raised before. I mean, you're raising a good issue about I don't think there's any move afoot to do anything more to either the fishing or the trapping, but we wanted it really crystal clear on the hunting so there wouldn't be that concern.
Just
go ahead.
Well, okay, that if it had read fishing, hunting, and trapping, I would be...
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
But it appears to, at the end of the day, somehow depreciate those two and strengthen one or the other, and I don't like that as a result. So I guess I'll ask it in the positive and the affirmative. Mr. Chairman, would the maker of the motion add the other two categories so we cover all three bases?
Why don't I withdraw amendment number one?
We'll check it.
Okay.
Just if I could real quickly, sure. For the record, there wasn't any desire to lessen the others at all. So we can just double check it and come back to be sure on it. But that wasn't the desire to elevate one over the others.
No, and I understand that. In respect to the maker of the motion, I just saw the problem.
Great.
Yes. Good. The maker of amendment one has withdrawn amendment number one. So that
thank you,
is
Mr. Chairman.
Withdrawn.
Mr. Chairman,
I know how confusing these things can sound when you can't see the amendment in front. Mm-hmm. For those out there, this was an amendment dealing with primarily a southeast and coastal park issue, not related to the public use area, trying to address a problem that's generally related to land and water management issues, and the amendment was withdrawn. So this was not dealing with the Kinnick public use area management.
All right. Is there any other amendments? Amendment one is withdrawn for now. Okay, seeing no other amendments, does this have a fiscal note? It does.
Yes, it
does. Stokes, do you want to talk about that at all?
And, Mr. Chairman, if I might invite Mr. Miley as his voice back to the
committee. Okay, yeah, keep looking for him out there. Mr. Miley.
Representative Meyer, regarding the fiscal note, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, again, for the record, I'm Dick Miley, the director of DNR Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And we have a fiscal note that primarily has two components. One is to do a two-year-long planning process. We actually envision the planning process wouldn't begin right at the beginning of the fiscal year. That's why the numbers look kind of if you look at the details of the fiscal note, it shows the planning effort starting kind of slowly, and we had a staff person on kind of halfway through as it gets geared up. But anyhow, that's the first component is the planning effort. Second component is a long-term position within the department to actually be the manager for the Kinnick Public Use Area, and that we envision continuing on indefinitely. And that's, I mean, the biggest issue out there, as folks have said, is enforcement of rules and some sort of presence by some sort of authority. And we feel just having, being our presence in the field on a regular basis out there will deal with some of the significant problems out there. In particular, there's a lot of people that dump trash, junk cars, have parties, things like that. And some of those things can be lessened by having a DNR person out there. There also will long-term needs to be a little more state trooper presence to deal with some of those things. But we feel that having a DNR presence out there will help deal with some of those issues.
Okay, I do have a question on the fiscal note here. You're going to start out with two people?
For 07 and 08, and then drop down to one person in 09, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, that is correct, because the first 2 years you've got a, we have a, essentially somebody that's on our staff doing the planning effort. And we envision that the person that actually is being hired on as the long-term manager during the first 2 years would be also heavily involved in the planning effort.
Okay. So then what happens to that person after the, does that person just get absorbed somewhere else? In
terms of the one person that would be the planner, that would either, that's a position that would exist only as long as this planning effort's in place. So that person would go away, or we'd have other planning projects depending on what was in the future.
Okay, very good. And then it looks like you have money in here too then for office space. Is there existing office space in the valley that perhaps these two people, then later one person, could use?
In terms of the planner position, would actually be based out of Anchorage most likely, which is where our planning staff is and mapping staff and kind of the resources to support a planning effort are. The valley position, I believe we have included funding for office space. We, DNR does have a state part or state forest, not forest, state agriculture office out there. I'm not sure what sort of space they have, but we, as a general rule in our fiscal notes, have included costs for office space because we've, in recent years, have generally been charged for that. So,
okay, very good. Any other questions on the fiscal note? Okay, any comments, questions on the bill itself?
Rick Schnapp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vic, you spoke just a little bit ago about what, after this thing is put into effect and you move forward with it, that this person who was elected would be able to help state troopers? Is that what you said?
No, I think it would be the other way around. We would rely on the state troopers to help with some of the enforcement activities, because some of the activities out there are actually violations of various state laws. This is an area where an awful lot of particularly stolen vehicles from Anchorage end up getting taken to and dumped and so on, and some of those activities or enforcement of those things would require the troopers, because those would be, we don't want the DNR folks to actually be getting involved in law enforcement issues such as that.
Okay, so this would be more of like a management ranger, a park ranger?
Representative Chanel, through the chair, I wouldn't describe him as a ranger. I think it's more of a person that would be, actually their role is going to have several purposes. One is just to deal with some of the on the ground issues, like if there's degradation to trails and so on, they might be the person that coordinates getting the trail rehabilitated or getting grants to do that or working on contracting to do that kind of work. They would be the person who would possibly, there's a parking area established, they'd be responsible for making sure that we have signage that says what the rules are, and they'd be out there at times when there's a lot of public use to help explain, you know, what the rules are and kind of just keep a general eye on things. But we don't envision it would be a ranger type person, you know, would not be a person carrying a gun or having that type of law enforcement authority.
Okay, well, I didn't mean it as carrying a gun, but I still, I think just the job description you provided is more like a park rangers is what I'd call them if they're going to be out there, not necessarily enforcing enforcing laws, but they're going to be out there working with the public is where I'm hoping that they're going to be, and not sitting in an office somewhere spending their time applying for grants, things like that.
So I think you made it clear. That's correct. That's how we envision it, as a person that would spend a fair amount of time on the ground and on their, you know, on a four-wheeler getting back there to, you know, see what's happening and so on.
Okay. Is that a summer job maybe I could have? I just. Thanks, Nick. I'll be here all this summer, so don't worry about it.
Representative Keller.
Just a comment, because the misperception up in our area has caused problems from time to time. When you mention a park ranger, this is clearly not a park. And I think that has to be clear from the beginning, that we're not creating a park here. This is something different from a park, and I just think where we get that confused, we end up with some real conflicts.
It represents Kelly through the chair. We understand that, and that's why we've specifically, currently we have a few public use areas, and they are managed by Mining, Land, and Water. The largest is Nelchina. The one up in that you may be familiar with is Goldstream Public Use Area.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. If there's no other comments, questions, concerns, Representative Warwick?
Representative Schultz, this isn't a critical habitat area either, is it?
Not as a whole,
but that's certainly, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Sure.
If I might. But that's part of the process, is identifying areas, i.e. spawning areas, and that's part of the process, and that's one of the things that we're trying to. But I know it's 260,000 acres. There are definitely sensitive areas within, and that's right now. There's no framework to do that. And creating this multiple use, and I just want to emphasize multiple use is my goal. It's been in every one of my campaigns. Documents that I've done for the state, you know, it's multiple uses was my goal here.
Does that answer your question? Okay, very good. All right, anything else? Any other questions? Representative Foster, you ready?
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move HB 307 out of committee with the attached list of notes with individual recommendations. I appreciate the sponsor bringing this forward for his district. They sound all and very supportive. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. After any objections? Seeing none, bill passes by the committee.
Thank you, Representative Stokes.
Thank you, the committee and the members, for your indulgence.
All right, let's go on to House Bill 493, school construction bonds. We did start the hearing this bill, and we closed public hearing. And so I think we're about ready to take up amendments. I'm going to ask Mr. Eklund to please join us. Mr. Deans to stand by. Okay, let's see. Yes, looks like we have four amendments. And I believe that's Amendment 1 was adopted. So we're ready for Amendment 2. Amendment 2, everybody should have their amendments in their file. Amendment 2, this is Representative Jewell. Go ahead, Representative Jewell.
I will not be offering Amendment 2.
Okay, Amendment 2 is not being offered. Amendment 3.
I'll move Amendment 3 just for discussion.
Okay. Okay.
Amendment 3...
400 million or 400,000?
That's 400 million.
Okay.
My question is this was the intent of the chairman for there to be a cap on the amount available, or or is this just going to be a blank amount?
Open-ended.
Open-ended, yeah. Thank you.
This is a finance bill. It was my intent, and Mr. Eklund can help me. My intent was at 60% instead of the normal 70% that we would need a cap. So the cap would be open during that two-year period. And the reason there was that at 60%, it wouldn't be as attractive as the 70%.
No.
And so there won't be as much demand for that money. So that's why we did not have a cap on it.
So basically no cap.
No cap.
And the last go around, based on the last testimony, yeah, as you were explaining your bill, there's $699 million, I think, bonded for initially, and then when it was extended, another $200 million. Was that off of the previous debt reimbursement package? Would that be correct, or was it total $699?
Through the chair, Representative Jewell, from 2002 to 2004, there was an open-ended 70% approved reimbursement rate and 60% non-approved reimbursement rate. Under that program, there were $699 million worth of bonds authorized. Last year, what happened, there was $177 million, I believe, bonds authorized that had caps. There was a cap structure to that.
Okay. All right. Okay, I just wondering. Thank you. And so based, I'll withdraw then.
Okay. Amendment number 3 is withdrawn. The objection is obviously withdrawn. Okay. Amendment 4.
These things are.
I'll move Amendment 4 just for discussion.
Okay.
This discussion is this. This debt reimbursement is targeted, generally speaking, for those that are in the organized areas. And I know we have a ways to go before end of session, but the last time we ran a debt reimbursement package, we also made some allowances for rural construction through a GO bond. And I know that there's a capital bill still being worked on, and I just wanted to raise the issue of that, and maybe we'll continue to have discussions. We may see this again before it comes to the floor, but hopefully we can continue to work on recognizing that there are needs all over the state that need to get addressed under construction and major maintenance.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Lewis and Joel, and I appreciate you bringing this to our attention. I think that the bill that you're referring to was 2002, where there was a school GO bond, as well as a transportation bond, as well as a school construction bond bill similar to this. I think my intent is certainly not to let us get out of balance between urban and rural school construction and school major maintenance. I do think, though, that last year we cleared off the major maintenance list, and a lot of those were in rural schools. A lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And I think that we have been kind of going on a case-by-case basis on some of the rural schools thus far this year. I know in White Mountain, of course, their school burnt down, but that was one in the Fast Track Supplemental. And I know there's some other needs out there. NOATEC was one that was brought up last year that I'm sure still needs to be done, as well as others. So, no, we're aware of that, and we'll visit that as we get to the capital. But
thank you. I'll withdraw number 4.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, Amendment 5.
I'll move Amendment 5.
Okay, object for discussion.
Amendment
5. So that when we did the extension, one year extension last year, we had, as I recall, all the school districts kind of mapped out. And when the bill, as I recall, when the bill left the House, all of the eligible school districts were included, and something was going on the in the other body on the other side. One of the school districts fell out of this. And so what this amendment would do, amendment number 5, is allow a school district to participate in the debt reimbursement for that, and the district had approved those bonds, and you know, everybody's that's eligible has enjoyed that, and this is just complete the circuit. And I think it's probably more technical than anything. And that would be the North Slope Borough School District, so that people aren't wondering
okay.
which school district.
Well, maybe you can explain this a little bit better, and then maybe Eddie and Pete can help me. So what you're trying to do here is make the North Slope Borough qualify for the old or the current program,
the
70-30 program, right. That's in effect until October 1st. And then would you also want them to be included in this bill, the 60-40, that starts, when's this one start? November 30th.
I don't know that they've had any, if they choose to take stuff to the, yeah, if they would choose to take stuff before their voters and try to be eligible for something, I think they should have that opportunity.
I guess two questions. One is, can we do what Representative Jewell is trying to do here is obviously make the North Slope Borough qualify for the program that's currently in existence, and I'm not sure why they don't qualify now anyway, and then also make sure that they will qualify for this program, the 60-40 program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Eddie Jeans, Director of School Finance. And I'll answer your second question first.
Okay.
That's the easiest one. The proposed legislation, House Bill 493, is open to all school districts, so North Slope would qualify under this proposal. The first question goes back to Senate Bill 73 that was passed last year, and basically what this amendment would do is reallocate the allocations that were approved in that bill, taking $2 million out of the allocation for Anchorage and allocating that to the North Slope Borough.
That's right. And that's bond packages that didn't get voted on this week.
You want to take $2 million from Anchorage, Reggie?
I think to use it.
Okay. Now we get the real story. Go ahead.
That was just a slight oversight on my part, Mr. Chairman.
You didn't mention that. Go ahead, Eddie.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the North Slope Borough did pass the bond package in November of 2005, so a school bond package. So they would fit within this timeline to qualify for debt reimbursement. They would have to get the project to the department prior to October 31st for approval. The one thing that I do need to mention is they would not be eligible for any reimbursements in the 07 budget because they didn't notify us of their anticipated debt. So they would be able to qualify from 08 out.
Okay. Well, just a couple comments. I think I'm opposed to this for the obvious reason. But I think the Anchorage voters did vote in April, and you're right, all the school bonds failed. But I do think they are going to attempt to try to do a special election during the primary election, which would be in August, and so they would still qualify for this program. So my question to you, Representative Jewell, would be that when the North Slope Borough had their election, were they aware that they were going to have to pay 100%? With the school at the time that
I
they
don't
voted.
Have an answer to that question. I don't think so. I can get that answer for you, but we can get that, you know, between now and the floor if necessary and clear some of these questions up if you...
Okay, that's fair enough. Mr. Eck?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Peter Eck, staff to Representative Meyer. I would just add, Mr. Chairman, that... and talking to others, when SB 73 was crafted last year, kind of the basis for the caps that were put into place and the construction of that legislation, was the start of it was the
these lists, priority lists for both school construction and major maintenance. At the time, there was no projects on the either list for the North Slope Borough.
Okay. Very good. Appreciate that. Sure.
That's okay. That's different than the information I had.
Okay. Any other discussion? Maybe we can take the, get the $2 million from the Mat-Su Valley or from Kenai.
Well, till I till I get better information. Of course, you know it. I guess the point I want to make, you know, here, and I can pull it until the floor, so I've got more of my ducks lined up, is that I'll pull it for now and work with you till before we get to the floor.
Okay, very good, Rich and Joel. And I personally, I wouldn't be opposed to including $2 million if you're not taking from another district right. To do that. Now, Mr. Eklund, he brought up a point that I think we need to investigate, that if it wasn't on the DED list at the time, then I think they'd only qualify for 60% reimbursement, right? Or would they qualify at all?
Mr. Chairman, that under the debt program, districts have to submit those projects separately, and we would evaluate that project and determine the reimbursement level at that time. So it doesn't necessarily have to be on the grant list.
Okay. Well, we'll work with you. And
yeah, work with Mr. G. Okay, Representative Kelly.
Just for this whole new idea of tradable credits, I'll talk to you after the meeting.
Fairbanks may sell you some credits here. They probably Anchorage credits.
Yeah, I know. Okay, any other...
Full value plus.
Any other comments or suggestions or amendments? I guess just a personal note. It was a little disappointing, at least in my community of Anchorage, to not see the school bonds pass because they were needed, and of course those were at a 70% reimbursement, and these are at 60. The thought, though, is that with the 60, those schools and those communities who really need the schools will go ahead and bond for it, because obviously 60 is better than nothing, and. And also by doing it this way, we don't have to put a cap on it. We had a cap on the 70 because there was a concern that the Mat-Su Valley, Fairbanks, Anchorage, somebody might try to use up all the credit amount to get caught up on their schools, which apparently that's not happening. Go ahead, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, just may I ask, is it your thought that 60% and the 40% might be more sustainable?
More sustainable? Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I was going to figure that through your going.
Okay. And also, I think when we say 60-40, just for the record, that's 60% that are approved by DED, 40% if they're not approved by DED. Is that fair?
60% reimbursement if they meet our space guidelines. If they exceed our space guidelines, it would be 40%.
Correct. Yes,
Representative. These kind of mechanisms are very important because there are communities in the state that always take advantage of this and are always adopting, and mm-hmm. voters are always passing bond packages to improve their schools, even if they're not building new schools or using it to improve schools. I think that the community I'm from has always approved every bond package for every time it's related to a school. You know, they've always put their money on schools. So I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barwick. And this has kind of been a little bit of a beef to me, too, because this is a form of municipal revenue sharing. I mean, the state doesn't have to match these bonds, but we always have either, I guess, some years up to 80%, and recently 70, and now this feels 60. Of course, some years it was 50-50. So. Okay, any comments on this? Representative Hawker.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Taking on the in previous debate here, as well as my full endorsement for your, the discipline and the conservative approach to financing in the bill as presented.
Thank you.
Okay.
I have a quick question.
Sure, Richard.
So if a has got a school district in my district that has got a May 12th election, so if they don't approve it within this time frame, then they would, their next step would be under this plan. So it's, if I'm reading this correctly, they don't pass, and assuming this bill passes, it probably behooves them to do 70%. I just want to make.
Yeah, Representative Stoltz, I think the current 70% is in effect till end of October, is it?
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't pass in May, if they can have another special election.
Special election.
October 31st, they could.
You know, it's diminishing returns.
I understand. Okay, Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move out of Finance Committee HB 493 as amended with individual recommendations to be attached with the
okay. Any objections? Seeing none, that bill passes. Committee members, thank you, Mr. James. Mr. Eklund. Okay, let's move on then to HCR 30. This is Representative Jules' resolution. Let's see. Notice we have not heard this yet. Okay. We'll need a motion first of all to get a blank committee substitute for us. So I need it. Okay. The motion then is to adopt blank committee substitute for HCR 30 version 24/LS1605/L Kane dated 4/6/06 is the working document. The force. Any objections? Seeing none, we have that before us. And Representative Jewell, you want to tell us what it does, what it's about?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And thank you for adopting the CS. and if necessary, Michaela Saito, who's done a lot of work on this, can come up for questions.
Sure, please join us. How do you say the name again?
Michaela.
Michaela Saito, is it?
Saito.
Saito, all right.
HCR 30 seeks to create an Alaska Climate Impact Assessment Commission. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we know that things are changing in Alaska. Our weather patterns certainly seem to be. But there's other telltale signs. It includes infrastructure, assaults. We see it, for instance, in Shishwaf, Kivalina, Newtok, other communities that are exposed to longer periods of open water. Some of our fish and wildlife, our forests and other vegetation, fire hazards, sea ice conditions, permafrost, glaciers, transportation systems. So what HCR 30 seeks to do is to put a group of people together, as it's outlined here, to try and assess, to understand how the state of Alaska, as these changes occur, can mitigate and plan for these. We more are by nature, I think, a reactive body as we budget, you know, from year to year. But by creating an extension ourselves for members of our body and the members that you see being outlined here, it puts us in a better position to I think, be more mindful and also to help the legislature plan and how we mitigate. And I think it's important to do this now. I think already we're starting to see, I think, economic impacts. Thinking, you know, we've had how many days now, well, weeks, actually months, I guess, if you will, of PPT hearings where resource development, especially in the vein of oil and gas development, has been the mainstay of our healthy economy in Alaska. What happens if if things continue to change and our exploration seasons get closer, what impact does that have on us? What impact does it do we potentially face if sea levels rise to any significant degree to current infrastructure? As water temperatures warm, are there going to be impacts to our fish? We have huge commercial fish that we depend on, and how do we plan and prepare for some of those things? And I think a commission such as this would help us in that area. You know, we've seen coastal communities, as I mentioned before, come under assault, and we're getting extremely close to, if not, we're at that place where we have to start thinking about potentially moving communities. What's that cost going to be? How should we, if that comes to pass, how do we communicate with those? Where and how they should move? What's our relationship there going to be? As you can see, the way this is structured, we've got two members from both bodies, the House and the Senate, and then 11 public members, as you see outlined there. And we certainly want to make sure that there are members from the communities that are impacted, from the industries that are going to be impacted, along with scientists and others that understand this stuff probably a little bit more than us, but can get this information back to us and as I stated at the beginning, help us plan for potential mitigation measures. And with that, I'll leave it to questions or public testimony, however you want to handle this.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Jewell or his trustee staff? Otherwise, we do have several people online to testify.
And we
have an amendment, too, it looks like. Okay.
Yeah.
Representative Jewell.
No. We'll get to it later.
Okay. If there's no questions. Certainly, I think our senior senator, Senator Stevens, when he addressed this, had talked about the coastal areas being impacted. I think he may be onto something here, Representative Jewell. Okay, if there's no comments, let's go to public testimony, and it looks like that John Quellkamp. Sorry.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. I know I said your last name wrong. I apologize.
It's okay. Cloud Camp, and don't feel bad about it.
Okay, thanks.
Again, my name is John Cloud Camp. I'm Vice President of Alaska Land Operations for Cruise West. I've been a resident of Alaska since 1978. In the first 9 of those years, I lived in Nome. For the past 19, I've been here in Anchorage. Just briefly, Cruise West is a small ship cruise line. We have 9 vessels operating in Alaska, but they carry only between 80 and 130 guests. Because of our size of our vessels, we're not able to only call on those traditional ports in Southeast, but we also are able to travel to many non-traditional places, such as 23 communities in total, actually, some of which don't even have port or docking facilities. And one of our itineraries takes us up to the Arctic Circle. It's a 13-night cruise between Anchorage, Nome, and includes stops at Kodiak, Geographic Harbor, Chemehuevin Islands, Dutch, Nunavak, St. Lawrence Island, as well as stops in the Chukotka Peninsula before Diomede and then turning into Nome. Where the vessel has seen, actually, some interesting damage from 2 back-to-back storms of the century that have occurred now in Nome in just the last 2 years. In our first year of operation on this itinerary some 5 years ago, we actually included verbiage in our brochure that once said that above the Arctic Circle, we would try and cruise to the Arctic ice edge, but after the first year, we simply removed that from our marketing, any reference that we would cruise to the ice cap, as the ice was much further north than anticipated and has been shrinking further and further away every year. In fact, we'd need another full day just to cruise to that once we crossed the Arctic Circle. And although I don't pretend to speak for the visitor industry, I believe few would disagree that with seeing the state establish a commission to study, understand, and plan for the effects of a warming environment, whether it's man-made or simply a cyclical swing. What's causing it right now is certainly part of the debate, and from our view, how we plan for it seems to be prudent as well. We certainly believe that it would be good to have a commission study and analyze how docks, bridges, and roads and other infrastructure be affected. Also of interest is how a changing climate will relate to our state as a changing destination. Naturally, we have a niche in sharing our guests with our guests the fascinating cultural destinations that are rather exotic, such as the subsistence communities of Savonga, Diomede, and St. George. Their cultures and history seem to be facing some extreme challenges in light of the hazards a warming environment might present to them. And taking into account the challenges of a warming environment in planning for their capital construction projects in the future seems to make sense as well. And finally, establishing a commission to gather facts of a warming Alaska and what it would mean to the future of Alaska seems prudent at this point. As you know, seven other western states have taken similar measures to analyze its impacts on their citizens as well. It seems like a smart investment given what it's at stake, and investing a little money now to help plan for the future seems wise. And thank you.
All right. Thank you, John, for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Seeing none, let's go on to Glenn Jude.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Glenn Jude, professor of forest ecology at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm in the School of Natural Resources, but I'm offering these comments on my own. I've been involved in the area of assessing climate change and climate change impacts for over a quarter century. I have a recent article that's in the publication Agriborealis, the magazine of the School of Natural Resources here, and it's available on the web. It's titled, Assessing Climate Change, Did We Get It Right? And it's simply a comparison of a series of papers that were published as a proceedings at the Ag and Forestry Experiment Station in 1982, compared with a 2006 update on the situation that was described. I think it's an important criterion for you as policymakers to use in judging folks like me as scientists. Did you get it right? I mean, do you know what you're talking about? And I just urge you to take a look at that if you have any questions. All the quotes that I've pulled there, these folks were right on the target. We don't have any higher standard than that in science. If we see a process happening, we believe we understand it, and if we make a prediction based on that, and the prediction is correct, then that's it for us. That's what we can offer in the process. The changes from climate variability in climate change, as now unfolding, are across the board in Alaska. Sea ice is thinning and being reduced in extent. Sea level has risen, is rising, and will continue to rise. Breakup on rivers is earlier. Growing season lengths in some localities in Alaska have doubled. Lakes are drying and disappearing. Permafrost temperatures are warming and have begun to thaw in some places. Glacier mass balance is decreasing. Tree growth increases and decreases. We have an unprecedented outbreak of fires. Temperature-triggered insect outbreaks have happened to a vast extent. So all of that's on the record. We can go through lots of information to give you the knowns, the unknowns about that. But the question really, I think, for you as policymakers is, okay, so what? What do we do about this? And I see the proposal for an Alaska Climate Change Commission as a very good step. There's only so much we can do as scientists. We need to move now to a new generation of questions and applications of what we have found out. And the best way I can think of to do that is is to get a representative group of people who are in the professions and traditional ways of life and resource systems that there are in Alaska and have us work with them to transfer information about what we know and let us put our heads together to find out what would it be prudent for us to do now that will prepare us to deal with these unfolding issues and the issues that are to come. Final point, this is Finance Committee. The fiscal note should be the focus, I understand. It's a pretty modest amount of money. How can that charge get done with such a small amount of money? I think the idea here is that this is kind of like drafting some blueprints, some strategies, and some ideas that will then get uptake out in agencies and businesses and communities. The academic community and the scientific community is really anxious to assist in this process and do what we can to help transfer this information and work with people in this way. So we stand ready to do that and hope that this vehicle can be available to help us do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Judea. Any questions from the committee? Representative Gatto is not here to debate you, so we'll move on. Dr. Roland Ma.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Proceed, sir.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Roland Ma, M-A-W on the last name, live at Kasilof, Alaska. Currently the executive director for the United Cook Inlet Drift Association. We represent some 580 families that depend upon salmon fisheries in Upper Cook Inlet and want to lend our voice of support for HCR 30. We compliment the sponsor of HCR 30 and certainly encourage and fully support the comments of the sponsor as well as the two gentlemen that just preceded me. In the Cook Inlet area, we're currently struggling with salmon returns into the Upper Cook Inlet up into the Mat-Su. And one of the things that we've noticed there is that over the last 13 years, there's been a lack of less rainfall than the 50-year norm. And at the stream temperatures, the water temperature themselves are near the thermal limits, the upper limits for salmon survival for both adults and fry. So we're currently working through that in front of the committee. You'll see some proposals to spend a couple million dollars doing some research on that. And certainly, I'm not saying that all of it's due to climate conditions, but it's certainly one of the variables in there. We're seeing similar effects here on the Kenai with the glacial runoff of Wolverine Glacier and the turbidity that's bringing down into Skelak Lake. And in the last 10 years, we've seen the zooplankton production in Skelak Lake drop by one-third. So anyway, we are very much in support of this, quite concerned about it, lend our support to you to pass this and make this thing happen, and would look forward to serving on the commission in the event the commission is put in place. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Ma. Any questions from members? Seeing none. We have Bob Swenson from EGGS and DNR. Are you just here for questions or online?
Yes, that's correct.
Not quite double.
Is there anybody else online that wishes to testify?
7 degrees. Man, 7 degrees.
Hearing none. Is there anybody in the audience that wanted to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public testimony portion. Representative Kelly.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I might, might I ask if Dr. Judea is still online?
Dr. Judea?
Dr. Judea.
Glenn, you still online? Yeah. Glenn Judea, you still online?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Weirach.
I just wondered if anybody online or the sponsor knew why retreating sea ice would affect polar navigation and raise security concerns. What the security issue is.
Sponsor or staff?
Trying to say my name. As I understand it, the polar navigation so far, the receding sea ice is opening it up, so vessels are able to. Sorry. As I understand it, the receding sea ice is opening up the polar regions for ships to travel more frequently, which is a good thing, but not always a great thing. So that's my understanding of the navigation.
And the security concern?
The security concern, as we can all imagine, with all of the ports and docks at debate that we've just heard in the news, is, you know, we don't have, this opens up sites for people to come into Alaska and other areas in the Arctic region through that area without crossing as much. Is that understandable?
No, because there's not sea ice blocking sea access that people will be landing in the Arctic and
in the Arctic.
Getting into America that way?
Yeah.
And there is,
Representative Jewell?
Mr. Chairman, there has been some discussion about, what is it, the Northwest Passage. We don't know if that's going to open up or just maybe even completely shut off, but that there's some thought there that, you know, that would increased traffic in our waterways for sure.
Representative Weirach, will you answer the question?
Okay. I think we've concluded the public testimony. We'll turn it back over to the real chairman.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz. Did we do the amendment?
Nope.
Okay, I believe there is an amendment. Was there anybody else who wanted to testify either here or online?
Public testimony and take Amendment 1, Representative Katula.
I move Amendment Number 1. And
I'll object just so we can hear.
There's also just a technical, two things technically. The first thing is, it should read a member who rather than a member that. And the member to my right caught that. He is correct. So if I could make that amendment to the amendment.
Could you say that again, please?
Instead of saying a member that is knowledgeable, it should read a member who is knowledgeable. Okay, so it's replacing that with who. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll, it's a friendly amendment to your own amendment. Okay.
Right. Thank you. And secondly, we would actually be deleting the current language that lists it's a member from the Department of Natural Resources and inserting this language. And the reason for it is evidently from the sponsor staff who's done research on this, the Department of Law says that a legislative branch can't mandate the appointment and participation of the executive branch, so that under separation of powers they feel much more comfortable with this type of language. I think it's pretty clear that the intent is to have someone, if not from DNR, to have all of those abilities and that's the reason for the amendment. Thank you.
Chairman, I might, I'm curious about that. It seems like we routinely do that, but it's usually covering language similar to a designee of the commissioner. Is that?
I've seen the language as well, and I'm really going on staff work here, but I can put on the intent on the language, you know, that it is to have someone from DNR or someone with extremely similar background.
Chairman, I've served on within the last year on two commissions that have department designees, revenue from DOT, from different. I've not heard the objection before, and I guess we've been slipshod out of most of our commissions we've enacted. And
that wouldn't surprise me, but I think it's actually a good issue in terms of the separation of powers, and as long as we have it on the record, who we really expect it to be is probably a little bit cleaner language.
Anything else?
Representative Stoltz? Mr. Chairman, and it, as I read this, it still could be somebody from DNR who might be the have the expertise technically in that area.
Absolutely,
but broadens the.
Yeah.
But that I don't necessarily, Mr. Chairman, follow the logic of the reason. But if you want to broaden it, I can go down that path.
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Representative Jewell?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. In the earlier iterations of this, we had Department of Transportation. I think we had DNR. We may have had another department or two. And we felt that that those bodies or those departments could very easily serve as ex officio. They do have, I think they will have skin in this just by the nature of the subject. And so we're trying to reach out to as much of a broader audience than just government, because we could do this with just government officials. I don't know if that's what we want necessarily, but make this as broad of our citizenry as we can.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Any other questions, comments, Representative Kelly?
Just a comment on the composition. I guess if I were going to go try to figure out what's going on and then what we want to do about it, I'd guys like Professor Barnes and Professor Judae, and could give you a list of half a dozen, you'd want them in your camp. The kind of expertise that says we know what's going on here. And I'm just a little concerned that the commission has got everybody on it. It isn't heavy enough in the technical. Just a comment. Something you might want to take a look at, because I can assure you that particularly at UAF, they've got some climatological change folks that are second to none in the world. And I would think that if we're going to have a commission like this, that we're way light from the university. So just a comment.
Go ahead, and if I can, Mr. Chairman, in response to Representative Kelly, when we developed the language of this, we knew the membership was going to change, and it already has, and because we figure that, and that's why, you know, once it leaves, once the bill gets introduced, while it might have your name on it, it ain't yours anymore. Or it isn't yours anymore, and you get the thinking of everybody else, and that's what I was hoping would occur as we went along here, of what kind of makeup is the best would serve the best function to accomplish what we want to do here, and that's, you know, in part why we have the committee process, and so some of that has occurred, and I'm sure that by the time it gets to the floor. That we may see some more of that.
Thank you. Just one follow-on.
Sure.
The other thing I think that that so we just don't end up with something that we get a bunch of folks to confirm what we already knew was going on in different areas. Is this how's this going to touch down on the ground? In other words, is this going to be the type of report that says here's what's going on? And in COTS, that's going to mean a 6-inch rise in the level of, you know, the water by such and such a date, and therefore these actions are going to have to be taken, and you know, the impact that the tourist guy talked about, the cap moving north like it's running away from us, and therefore the impact on the tourist. Is this going to touch down in specific recommendations about how we are supposed to respond to this?
I refer you to the last 3, therefore, be it resolved on the last page, that the Commission would deliver a report and its findings to the legislature by March of 07 and on 08 with proposals and consideration, with the latter being the final report and recommendations of what we should be doing. And if we find, based on that report, what they're recommending, we would either suggest the continuation or the termination, whether or not we find value in what they're doing. That becomes something that becomes the purview of the, and I would, I would really like to see what that end result is, to see what that decision is, because I think if this is, and if I'm understanding you correctly, Representative Kelly, that this could be a very long-term thing, because I don't think this is a, and I think they've got, considering what's on here, they've got the work cut out for them, and I look forward to that report and our interaction with it.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. Anything, any other questions, comments, amendments? Okay, Representative,
did we still have hers before?
Yeah,
something?
We didn't adopt.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I think I objected so that we could discuss. I'll remove my objections. Is there anybody else object to Amendment 1? Okay, seeing none, Amendment 1 is accepted. Okay, so we now have HCR 30 as amended back before us. Representative
Well, I want to thank Representative Jewell for bringing this forward. I think it's ridiculous that Alaska isn't the leader in the world in this kind of work. We're always saying how great our university is and how great our people are doing the research. They should have been bringing this to us years ago. And I'm glad you're taking the lead finally on getting this action.
I can't take the credit for it. Most of our bills comes from somebody else putting it to us, and then we attach our name for it. But I do look forward to, if there are suggestions for the makeup of this by the time we get to the floor, I'm really open to suggestion. Because I want to see us get the most gain from it.
Okay, any other comments? Secretary, you want to move this?
I'd like to. Thank you. My first one. I move HCR 30 from committee with the attached fiscal note.
As amended?
CS. The CS. And as amended.
Any objections? I see we did discuss the fiscal note, but there is... there are two fiscal notes attached?
Yes.
Okay, one was in the attorney.
One was in the attorney.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any objection? Seeing none, bill passes committee. Thank you, Representative Jewell.
Thank you
very much. Meet your staff.
Yeah, I was going to say, nice to finally meet your staff.
Thank you.
Okay.
Next one.
Bruce, thank you.
Okay.
Best
job.
I'm going to go on now to House Bill 105, Medicaid for adult dental. Let's see. First, we'll need a motion to get the CS in front of us. Okay. We move. Okay. It's been moved that we adopt blank committee substitute for HB 105, version 24-GH1081/F. Michelle, dated 04-05-06 as the working document for the committee. Is there any objections? Okay. Seeing none, we have that before us. Okay. See, what do we have? We have folks from the department. Hess here, Bill Hogan, Brad Worcester, and Janet Clark. Do you want to come up and explain the bill to us? And I know Representative Hawker, chairman of the Hess Subcommittee Budget, also has some comments on this. And then we do have several people online here to testify, and just looking at the names and who they're affiliated with, I'm assuming they support this bill, and it is my intent to hopefully move this bill out of committee today, and I think the only thing that would hold us back would be if we don't get it finished. So I guess the only thing I'm saying is I want to hear everyone's comments, but if we could be brief, may proceed the expedite process. Representative Hawker.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. And on that subject, I believe in previous conversations with those folks here to testify, I believe they would, recognizing your intent, be very happy to satisfy your need for expediency with a show of hands.
Show of hands. Most of them are online.
Showtime.
Yeah, show of voice.
Brad was to be online, he did not make it.
Brad? Okay, you want to edit?
He's on. No, he did. No, he didn't make it.
Okay. Yes, President Barr.
Might then admonish the witness to get to the root of the problem, because getting people to
pulling teeth around here with people in a piece of sand.
Yeah.
Much longer, we may all decay here pretty soon.
Okay.
Go ahead, I'll turn the floor over to you.
For the record, my name is Bill Hogan. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services, and my colleague is?
Janet Clark, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Health and Social Services.
Dr. Brad Whistler, who is the dental officer for the department, was not able to make it today. So in the interest of what the committee members have been talking about, I was going to tell you that my expertise in the dental field is that I'm married to a dental hygienist, and I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
That's good.
We are proposing changes to the range of adult dental services allowed in the Medicaid program. The adult dental coverage currently is really essentially only provides emergency dental care for individuals 21 years of age or older. This legislation would enhance the existing emergency dental care to include preventive and restorative care. Services like exams, cleaning, tooth restoration, lower and upper full dentures, et cetera, would be the kinds of services offered under this legislation. The expanded Medicaid benefit would benefit those who are most in need, as well as Alaska seniors. We proposed the legislation with a cap, no pun intended, $1,150 per year. One of the reasons we were able to come up with that dollar amount is that an individual in two successive years could get a full set of dentures. In other words, it currently costs about $2,300 for a full set of dentures. We think this is important legislation for a number of different reasons. As all of you probably know, infections of the mouth can cause all sorts of additional physical problems. Related to maintenance of diabetes, as an example. Pregnant women can pass dental infections or carries on to unborn infants. We also think it directly affects the ability for someone to be employed. If people have decayed teeth or have teeth that are missing, it really reduces the likelihood that they can be employed. I wanted to let you know that a lot of my experience over the last several years has been working with mental health trust beneficiaries. The mental health trust has what's called a mini grant program, and annually over $700,000 is spent through this program on dental care for mental health trust beneficiaries. If this bill were to pass, then we could use these Medicaid dollars for that purpose. I also, again, to go back to the employability issue, the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation has indicated that they spend annually about $100,000 to help people increase the likelihood that they can be employed. So with that, I'll defer to my colleague to talk about the fiscal note.
Mr. Chairman, my job here is to talk about the fiscal note and the numbers. We have a revised fiscal note that I hope the committee has, based on the CS that has been proposed, and it is reduced from the original fiscal note, and I'd like to describe why that is. The FY07 numbers, the reduction is from $3.5 million, our earlier estimate, to $2.6 million, with a reduction in the general funds from $759.3 thousand to $219.7 thousand for the first year. The fiscal note for the first year, we are assuming that we would provide coverage for only 25% of a full year based on having regulations in place and getting the program up and running. But let me tell you how we were able to reduce the fiscal note. First, we'd had a number of questions from legislators on the utilization assumptions. We had assumed that we would have a 35% utilization starting the first year and every year thereafter. In looking back at our assumptions, we basically changed the assumptions and are now thinking that we'll have a 15% utilization the first year, 25% the second year, and then up to 35% that following third year. And so we're able to reduce costs there. We also, after input from members of the legislature, looked at how much we spent on emergency dental coverage and factored in savings from that, where we believe we will not be spending as much on emergency dental. In year two, we think we'll have a 25% savings, or approximately $500,000 in emergency dental costs, and then in year three, 50% savings in emergency dental, or about $1 million. Thirdly, when the House Bill 105 was introduced last year, it was based on a federal Medicaid percentage of 50%. I think we've all learned that Congress was, with our congressional delegation, was able to change that in February in the Deficit Reduction Act. So we're able to go from 50% to our 57.58% in federal participation. That also saved in our general fund requirement. Fourthly, the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority agreed to maintain their funding even as we looked at some of these changes in assumptions. So as the Mental Health Trust Authority maintains their funding level, the general fund doesn't have to pick up as much. And so we really think the Mental Health Trust Authority is investing significant dollars in this fiscal note, $425,000 the first year, $1,425,000 the second year, and $1,425,000 the third year. As they see it, this is really going to impact and be a great benefit to their recipients. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, this CS has a sunset and will sunset after fiscal year 2009. So the fiscal note basically shows the cost just through fiscal year 2009. So that is a summary of the fiscal note. If you have other questions about the assumptions, I'm here to answer any of those questions.
Okay, very good. Any questions, Representative Kelly?
If we became convinced, and it would be easy, that the need is there, and we told you that you'd have to reallocate funding within the department to cover this, could you do that? Are there areas where you could make the kind of cuts that it would take to swallow this increase?
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, making cuts in the Medicaid program is difficult. We've learned as we've done that cost containment over the last 3 years that if the department is not aligned with the legislature on what direction we're going for the Medicaid program, then either we're criticized or you're criticized for having those kinds of reductions. If there are areas where we're not spending as much, you bet. We can move money around to make up those kind of differences. But as we worked with the budget with Representative Hawker this year, we really talked about being honest and upfront about the costs, what it is going to cost, making sure the legislature knows that. We continue to work on trying to have an efficient Medicaid program, but if we were to, you know, have to find money internally, I think that would be difficult. We'd have to work that out and be really upfront about what we were doing.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Tula.
Do most programs like this start out with a sunset? I'm just wondering why the sunset?
Through the chair, Representative Curtula, we have had programs that have had a sunset before. Senior care is one. I think that is a recent trend of the legislature to basically see how a program is working and if the results actually prove out before we get it codified forever in statute. So, yes, I think that's been a trend that we've seen recently.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Kelly.
Just to comment on that, though, as a practical matter, that isn't the way it works, because the program is launched, people come in and naturally take advantage of the benefit, and we try to cut it in here, and the howling level is far more than it would have been if we say no at this point. So, I mean, I just see as a practical matter, it isn't a sunset. It's a miserable, okay corral just put off 1 year or so when you've got to fight the battle. So it doesn't give me much comfort, and I'm not being critical. You're very accurate of how it works, and I know you know that. But it's just it's no comfort, I don't think, for a legislator in a time when when we're working with the size on the HES budget that is just going for the moon, and we don't see, even with the cuts and the attempts to make reductions, we're not making much headway. I'm discouraged with the unsustainable nature of it, and every time we reach in, whether and try to pull it down, the howling level is severe, and real people are at the end of your finger when you point and say, well, we want to cut here or there or there. So it's tough to go into something like this unless we can convince ourselves that it's sustainable. I'd rather have the courage up front to say, I don't think we've got the capacity to sustain this over the long haul, if that's where we end up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hawker.
Thank you. I would respectfully disagree with that position in this particular case. The point of establishing a very short windowed sunset on this was to, A, you know, first off, commence on a, you know, program. We have to first make the policy call that says we even want to go this direction. And, you know, I would respect this committee if it said, no, we don't want to take care of this circumstance. That's a legitimate policy call. And then we stop it right here and now, you know, end of story. But rather than create it as an entitlement into perpetuity, we're entering into this with an understanding in the health community that this is, in fact, a trial balloon going forward. Quite honestly, we don't know where this is going to end up. My gravest fear, and I'll tell you, I'm going to make more comments later, but I was significantly opposed to this bill in its original form. But it has been restructured and rewritten now to avoid the problem that, two and a half years hence from now, my greatest fear was we had another PCA on our hands. And instead of it being what we're projecting here, we had something that was just blown off the charts. And, you know, then you do have an out-of-control entitlement. So, again, the purpose of setting this up as a trial balloon with the complicit understanding of the involved community is that, if we make this policy decision, first and foremost, we've got a regulator and a reconsideration of it as we get some data behind us so we can make data-driven decisions rather than here where we're making a speculative decision onto the future of it. So, again, I really do believe that it's a very rational approach. And, you know, this is not an attempt to, you know, backdoor something in that's, you know, going to then be impossible to deal with. But it's, you know, we're entering into this as a defined programmatic window.
Any other questions for the state experts here? Seeing none, we're going to proceed on to the public testimony. Andy Pope here, Antuna. Mr. Ford's right behind him, just for preparation. Welcome, Mr. Pope.
My name is Andrew Pope. I speak primarily for myself. I just feel we've had much discussion over the last year and a half of the seniors at Mountain View, and I believe that my testimony will accurately reflect the consensus of those discussions. I want to thank the chairman and the committee for bringing this bill forth. It's an important bill. It's a worthy bill. It deserves your support. Dental benefits are not unique. Most insurance programs have them. Native corporations have them for low-income natives. Surprisingly, the federal government provides them to narcotics addicts and alcoholics. Low-income seniors seem to have fallen through that crack for a long time. This bill corrects it, and it has a number of virtues. The $1,100 threshold is excellent. It allows a senior to begin to get dental care. Then they can reach in their own pocket to extend that benefit. The permanent funds would be a big help if you could get started. But it's that first big bite that seniors can't reach. Some monthly dollars out of their own pocket. For instance, most seniors can provide for cleaning, maybe the next week out of their own pocket. But then where would they go for it without this bill? And the permanent fund alone would not do it. Don't forget low income seniors. Alaskan housing through the federal government recaptures one-third of their permanent fund. They never get it. So this bill is the mechanism up. And of course it has general benefits for the whole state. The money circulates in the state and recirculates. It goes to improve the infrastructure of our dental labs, technicians, and et cetera. I don't see a downside to the bill. If I did, I would have made note of it and found an argument against those downsides. And I thank you for your attention, and I hope the bill goes forward.
Thank you for having Mr. Pope.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz. My name is Mike Ford, and I'm here today on behalf of the Alaska Native Health Board. I'll be brief. We completely support House Bill 5. We appreciate the committee taking it up, and we hope that you act speedily. I know there's been a lot of discussion about costs. I think that what you have here in the CS is a cautious approach. It allows you to actually take a look at the program in practice, see how effective it is. If you don't like it, you have the power to change it. You don't have to wait 3 years if you don't want to. You can change it next year. But I think this is a prudent and practical approach. I think it's a critical thing for a lot of residents of Alaska, and I'd like to see the committee act on it speedily. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Ford? Thank you, Mike. Let's go online to Dr. White from Alaska Primary Care Association.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Katinka White. I am Oral Health Network Coordinator for Alaska's Community Health Centers. I am a diplomat of the American Board of Oral and Maxillofacial Pathologists. I am the representative for the Alaska Primary Care Association, the Community Health Center Dental Clinics, and I speak to you on behalf of those Alaskans that remain untreated victims of our nation's silent epidemic, oral disease. Dental caries, or tooth decay, and periodontal disease, the infection of the gum tissue and bone surrounding the teeth, are infectious diseases, transmissible from a parent to a child or from spouse to spouse. Except in the early stages, dental caries is irreversible and cumulative. It has been demonstrated that placing mothers on a regimen of routine dental cleanings and fillings was remarkably effective in reducing the incidence of tooth decay in their children. The University of Michigan School of Dentistry was able to show that those organisms responsible for periodontal disease were also transmitted from caregiver to child. We know that oral disease is associated with a number of health problems, from cardiovascular disease and diabetes to the birth of premature low-weight infants. The NIH reports that as many as 18% of the 250,000 premature low-weight infants born in the U.S. may be attributed to the infectious oral disease. Various strains of the human papillomavirus, an etiologic factor of many benign and malignant diseases such as oral warts and oral cancer, was also found to be associated with those individuals exhibiting higher incidences of untreated tooth decay. Several herpes virus species, such as cytomegalovirus and the Epstein-Barr virus, viruses responsible for infectious mononucleosis, lymphoma, and certain head and neck cancers, have been detected in the periodontal pockets and saliva of those individuals with active periodontal disease. The 2000 publication, Oral Health in America, a report of the Surgeon General, not only provides overwhelming evidence of this epidemic, but also recognizes the barriers that exist for certain population groups. In Alaska, this would include adults on Medicaid that only receive limited emergency dental treatment. I have worked in many rural communities in Alaska and have witnessed firsthand the ravages of this epidemic. Providing emergent dental care may relieve the acute symptoms, but it does not begin to eradicate the disease. Does it make sense to provide dental care to the children only to have them reinfected by their adult caregiver or parent? Does it make sense to only provide palliative treatment or limited care and ignore the remaining disease that exists in the mouths of these adults? Oral health means much more than healthy teeth. oral integral to the general health and well-being of all Alaskans. Oral health must be included in the provision of health. Good oral health, integral part of good overall health. Stop the epidemic. Support HB 105. Improve access to dental care for.
Thank you, Dr. White. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll go on to Jeff Jesse, the CEO of Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I will be very brief. I just want to reiterate the trust's support, both conceptually and financially, for this bill. I would like to reinforce Representative Hawker's statements regarding the sunset provision. Although I understand Representative Kelly's thoughts on how once these programs get put in place, they are difficult to take away. We certainly intend to, however, take this sunset provision very seriously and do everything that we can do to see that the program is managed to achieve the outcomes and the cost effectiveness that are being put forward in the fiscal note. And with that, I'm open to answering any questions.
Questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Jesse. Next, we go to Carla Shelton. Ms. Shelton?
Yes. My name is Carla Shelton, and I want to say thank you to the committee for listening to my support of House Bill 105. I come as a parent advocate. I have a 25-year-old disabled daughter who got off my insurance maybe about a year and a half ago. We're going through this right now. She was able to get her teeth cleaned. We paid about $140 for that. But now they are finding an area where her tooth is getting decayed. If this is not taken care of, it will run into a cavity, which will run into where her tooth is. If it comes out, it'll look bad. She'll need to replace the tooth. It just runs into such a huge amount of financial burden, which I cannot afford, taking care of two households, mine and hers. This bill would just save so much money in preventive care if she were able to have at least two of the cleanings that she has supposed to have a year. This would not have happened. The last cleaning she had was right before she got off my insurance, and she doesn't brush her teeth well, and that's not due to any fault of her own. And this bill would definitely help in preventive care. We've kind of been through the emergency before a couple of years ago where she was in pain. It was all because she didn't brush her teeth good, but because I had insurance, they covered it at the time. She was about 20, but we had to rush her to the dentist and find a dentist who would do it. But now she does not have my insurance, does not have the service, and cannot afford us even trying to fix this little bit of cavity that's there. We're looking for something that's reasonable, and we can't find anything at this time. So she's a prime example of you passing this bill that would totally help a lot of people that is like my daughter at 25. And as she gets older, her teeth, you know, as we age, you know, our body ages with us, and so do our teeth. So please, I really can't emphasize enough how important adult dental services for seniors and disabilities are. And Representative Hawker, I really appreciate you, what you said about the bill, and I appreciate you just keeping it alive, and I pray that it goes through. Thank you.
Shelton, I don't see any questions from the committee. Next, Emily Ennis, Fairbanks Resource Agency.
Good afternoon. I'm Executive Director of Fairbanks Research Agency, and as such, over the last 20 years, I've been responsible for services which promote the health and welfare of children and adults with developmental disabilities. This is a challenging job because there's never enough funding to meet the needs of people the way you hope you can. But I do feel that Alaska has done a pretty good job, an excellent job, except in the area of dental care for adults with disabilities. You've already heard, and I will be brief, you've heard what this care means to the many adults that I know and work with. And just want to say that I consider preventative dental care to be a necessary investment that goes hand in hand with the other disability services we've worked so hard to develop in Alaska. And you earlier asked for a show of hands, and you can't see it, but mine is held very high right now as I urge you to support coverage for adult dental services under Medicaid. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Ennis. Any questions, committee? Seeing none, Stacy Messerschmidt, I assume that's Dr. Messerschmidt?
I'm related to Dr. Messerschmidt, but he's my brother-in-law.
Okay.
Hi, my name's Stacy Messerschmidt, and I live in Tok, and I'm here just supporting the bill today. I don't have a testimony or anything.
Okay. Duly recorded, and thank you for waiting around. Sydney Stredicki, Partners in Policy.
Hi, this is Sydney, and thanks for listening to me. Let me see. I agree. I would like the bill to be passed, 105. I know several people who are elderly who are embarrassed about not having teeth. I've, you know, several people who have been in domestic violence and their teeth have been knocked out of their mouth. And they're embarrassed and they can't get jobs because people see them like that. I'd like people to be happy with themselves, where they can smile and see teeth instead of gaping holes. Because they get depressed. But I would like to see Bill pass, please.
Well, thank you, Sydney, for testifying today. Next, we're going to go to Pat Luby from ARP.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the advocacy director for AARP. Because Medicare has never provided any dental health coverage, what we've had is older people who stay away from the dentist. You end up with bad oral health. The first thing that comes from bad oral health is poor nutrition. And the next thing you know after poor nutrition, you have other physical health problems. This adds to the cost for the entire Medicaid program when you're trying to take care of physical problems that could have been avoided if we had provided proper oral health coverage in the first place. Just this morning, I was talking to the Anchorage Senior Center director. It was an older woman that has come in to see her. Her teeth hurt, and she simply can't afford to go to a doctor. She is on Medicaid, but she's eating baby food right now, and she, every time she comes in, she looks less healthy, and her weight is going down. This is a real problem faced by real Alaskans, and we sincerely hope that you will approve and pass HB 105. It's good public health. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Luby. Okay, now let's go to Homer, where we have Meg Mitchell.
Yes, thank you. My name is Meg Mitchell, and I am a 23-year resident of Homer, Alaska, and I have worked for the last 15 years at our local agency called the PLAY Program that works with people with developmental disabilities. And I've recognized for a long time that our state has been neglecting the dental care needs of adults on Medicaid. And I will just wanted to put that in perspective for you, and I will try and be brief, but I just wanted to say that I was really amazed in 2001 during the Special Olympics World Games in Anchorage. There was an international committee that Karen Perdue, who at that time was the head of Health and Human Services under Tony Knowles, and I'll never forget, one of the first things Karen addressed with this committee was a statement of basically something saying, I know Alaska does not provide dental care for adults on Medicaid. And this was like an open admission of our state's lack of attention to adult Medicaid recipients. And that was more than 5 years ago. And I think we've been ignoring this problem for many, many years, and I'm just very, very happy to even see the House Bill 105 in front of you, and I really hope that you will pass it today if you can, because I just wanted to put it in perspective also that there's more than 40,000 adults in our state who need improved dental care. That's 6% of the people in our state, or potentially 6 people out of 100 people that have basically no dental care needs because they can't afford it. We're talking about people who are on living off benefits, which is less than $1,000 a month. They literally can't afford for their dental care needs. And the mini-grant program has been fantastic over the years, but it's like winning the lottery when you got a mini-grant to take care of your teeth. Not everyone got them. Only a few selected lucky people did. So I really appreciate this bill, but I think we have a lot of catching up to do. I think that we it's really even hard to access a dentist in the Lower Kenai Peninsula who does Medicaid. So if this bill does get passed, folks are going to have to travel far to find a dentist that provides Medicaid. But at least they will be able to get some dental care needs taken care of, and it's long overdue. And like I said, I believe we have a lot of catching up to do, but I thank you for even considering it, and I hope you'll make it a priority to pass it today as soon as possible. And I think it's definitely a step in the right direction because we've neglected this. Our state's been remiss on this issue for way too long. And thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts.
All right. Thank you very much, Meg. All right, let's go on now to Stan Stedman.
Hi, this is Stan. I'm down on the Kenai Peninsula. I'm Executive Director of Central Peninsula Health Center, which operates Aspen Dental Center. And I'm also a member of the Alaska Mental Health Board. Just wanted to say that last year in our clinic, we saw close to 600 emergency adult patients, many of whom were Medicaid eligible. Had prevention and restorative care been available, the story would have been much different for these people, and much different in terms of public agencies and private organizations that serve these people in terms of economic impact. I would just urge you to pass House Bill 105.
All right. Thank you, Stan. Okay, let's go on to Jennifer McRoy.
Thank you. My name is Jennifer McRoy, and I'm a dental hygienist here in the Kenai-Sabaton area, and I just want to echo the same as Stan as well as Dr. White, the extensive need for comprehensive services for adult Medicaid recipients, and thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, let's go on now to Dr. Marguerite McIntosh.
Hello. I've been in private practice and associated with Central Peninsula Health Centers for the last 16 years in the Kenai Peninsula. Part Bill 105. I would like to add my thoughts on how it will save money. It not only reduces emergency dental care, it reduces emergency room visits for pain and infection, reduces hospital admissions for serious facial and pharyngeal abscesses. It can reduce secondary morbidities. We know that myocardial infarction, heart attacks, can be directly linked to infection in the teeth. I also take care of patients in the hospital who are seriously ill, who get secondary lung infections from the seeding of bacteria into their lungs. Therefore, their hospital length of stay is increased. This increases costs as well. And I also, of course, support it for the benefit it to the population in the prevention of suffering, illness, death, in supporting people's self-esteem and ability to get jobs and get off Medicaid. Thank you.
All right. And then, for the record, are you a dentist in Sedona?
Oh, I am a family doctor.
Family doctor. Okay.
Yes.
Very good. And that was Dr. McIntosh, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. If you could just give say your name and affiliation for us here. We are taking record of each testimony. Okay. Pamela Hawk.
Hi, thank you. My name is Pamela Hawk, and I'm a dental operations manager at Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center.
I see firsthand on a daily basis people coming in with caries, infections that are just, that would probably stop most folks in their tracks. These people are obviously being kept from employment. They have low self-esteem. I echo everything that many of the other folks have already said, and I won't go into all of that. Many of the people that I talk to, I try to counsel a lot of patients that come in on an emergency basis, and they're only able to get a tooth pulled, which we pull thousands of teeth a year, sadly. And these people say many, many times that they wish that they could do something to get preventive care. A lot of them are not in a position to take care of their teeth. Maybe they're homeless or other things are going on in their life. But many of those folks are invested and would like to be able to come in and get routine cleanings, routine examinations, and be able to have a tooth taken care of prior to it being such a problem that it has to be extracted. We're looking in Alaska, we're looking at such high costs for root canals, restorative treatment for teeth, that it's virtually impossible for these people in low incomes to take care of it. People with good jobs in even dental insurance have a rough time trying to take care of and keep teeth by doing the root canals and crowns that are necessary to keep those teeth healthy in their mouth. And I think that this is a step in the right direction. Anchorage Neighborhood Health, we support this. We see so many people, and I thank you for looking at this and taking testimony, and I hope that we can move forward. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Pamela. Okay. Was there anyone else online? Okay. Good. Okay. That concludes. testimony online. Is there anyone here in Juneau who would like to testify? Okay. Seeing none, then that concludes public testimony. So we'll go ahead and close the public testimony on this. We do have some amendments. Let's see. First Amendment is Amendment 1 by me. I'll move my amendment.
And I'll object for you.
Okay, and Ms. Cunningham, can you explain my amendment, please?
This is Meyer by request.
Right? Yeah, it is by request. Somebody must have requested this. I'm sorry? I moved it, and then it was objected by Representative Stoltz. Thank you.
Thank you for the record, Suzanne Cunningham, staff to Co-Chairman Meyer. This amendment was brought forward at the request of the Department of Health and Social Services. When we received the draft CS of the legislation, there was a little bit of a concern about how it was worded. The first change clarifies that the department shall pay for preventative and restorative adult dental services as well as minimum treatment. So the minimum treatment is outside of the cap on $1,150 for the preventative and restorative adult dental services. And the second change is on page 2, line 16 through 18. Instead of palliative treatment, the Department of Health and Social Services requested that it was immediate relief of pain and or reducing the spread of infection when applying medications by a licensed dentist.
Okay, would you like to add anything to that, Ms. Clark?
No, for the record, again, Janet Clark, Assistant Commissioner. We just, when we were looking at the CS, saw a few inconsistencies and wording that was a little vague and requested the change.
Okay, question, Representative Stoltz.
I'm almost embarrassed to ask, what does palliative treatment mean?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stoltz, that's why we suggested the change. That's to make it clear.
Okay.
It's immediate relief.
Pain. Okay.
To that point, Mr. Chairman, acute pain.
Acute pain, okay. Very good. The objection removed or abstained?
Yeah, now that I've removed all doubt that I'm ignorant on certain things, I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Objection has been removed for Amendment 1. Amendment 1 is accepted. Amendment 2 is Representative Wyrox. Representative Wyrox.
Ms. Wyrox, you want to move Amendment 2?
Object.
Okay. And just
to take that section and just make it the intent of the legislature, a letter of intent, and clarify some of what I think that what the department is, what we wanted the department to do, Mr. Chairman. Someone in the line of removing these intent languages, put it in a committee letter. I don't know if the sponsor had thoughts or not.
We can't hear you.
Blah, blah, blah.
I think we're all feeling that way right now. It's been a long day for all of us. Representative Wire, go ahead.
Anyway, it's a policy call. A lot of times we remove these intent languages from legislation, and we put it in a letter accompanying the bill that's passed out with the bill. I thought some of the language could be edited a little better, but that's all this does.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hopper, is the intent of the amendment to change the language in the bill or to have language similar to what's here included as a letter?
Thank you. It's the latter.
It's the what?
It's the latter.
Latter of what Representative Hopper said.
It was to have the language removed from the bill and put in a letter of intent.
I thought he said the latter of the letter. It was confusing.
The second part of Representative Hawker's question.
Okay. Clear as mud?
Okay.
Okay. And so you objected, Representative Stoltz?
Yes, I'm trying to understand. I think I understand it. I'm going to defer to the person who knows a little more than me.
I was going to say, Representative Hawker, you're the expert on this.
Then, Mr. Chairman, if I might on this, I would wholeheartedly endorse the amendment as stated because as I heard it, this was to establish a letter that would use this as essentially as its working guideline, the editorial latitude to construct a letter of intent to accompany the bill stating essentially what's been presented before us. And, as always in this committee, we've set that as a precedent many times over, and I just think it's absolutely the appropriate way to go forward. And I do concur with what's being done here. We're stipulating that regulations shall be tight. We shall continue to emphasize accountability. We shall be containing costs. It's very good guidance for writing a letter to accompany the bill.
Chairman, fully concurring with that and having participated in similar efforts, I move my objection.
Okay. So if there's no other objection to Amendment 2, Amendment 2 is adopted. Is there any other amendments?
Sorry, I wasn't more lucid.
It's okay.
Thank you, Representative Buckley.
It's getting late.
Any other amendments to House Bill 105?
Okay, let's see. We do need to adopt. We have a new fiscal note. We did have discussion on the new fiscal note. Representative Hawk, do you have anything else to add to the fiscal note?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, but I would just note for the committee that this meets my benchmark of leveraging state investment and I believe we spent a lot of time on this fiscal note. I believe it is as sound as a projection can possibly be in the circumstance, but for an investment of, 1.3 million Alaska dollars, we are returning into of general fund Alaska dollars. We will be able to return in delivered services $10.3 million worth of services. I mean, 10.3 return for $1.3 million investment meets my hurdle. Reserve further comments for a quick closure.
Okay.
Just the we may not have anybody here that can answer that, but the fine line between the emergency care, the care that we're currently giving under the current situation, is there anyone that can vary find that dividing line? Because if someone comes in and you do something that's related to the emergency, but they leave and they're back in pain, that afternoon or the next day, that didn't cut it, and I suspect we're not sending folks out like that. I'd just like to understand where that line is on what we're buying today or paying for today, if there's someone that could
do that. I think Ms. Clark or Mr. Hogan, one of the two, can address that.
Again, for the record, Janet Clark, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Health and Social Services. Through the chair, Representative Kelly, I think it's very well spelled out in the statute. The definition of emergency dental care in Alaska statute has been minimum treatment for the immediate relief of pain and acute infection. You can't just be in pain. You have to have an acute infection. And that is maintained in this legislation. The definition that is being used for the other services are preventative and restorative adult dental services. And in the dental world, again, our dental officer is not here, but in our discussions with them, that is quite a bright line. As we talk about having pain and acute infection, that's all we treat right now. And so that will remain, and the preventative and restorative services are what we're talking about here.
And if I might just follow on, and the restorative services would include a bridge, for example, between a missing tooth replacement between two healthy teeth, that sort of thing?
Yes, and again, the cost containment provisions in this legislation, it's really quite a milestone for adult dental services. We're capping what one individual can receive in any one year at $11,150 for the preventative and restorative services.
Point of
clarification, you just stated $11,150.
I'm sorry,
$1,150. There you go.
Thank you.
You just lost your vote. We had your
man. I'm sorry. So $1,150 is the total amount anyone can spend on those restorative services.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we'll get to $11,000. No, I just wanted to know where that line is, and that answers that for me. Thank you.
Any other questions for you?
Excuse me, this is Dr. White. Could I help clarify what the question about emergency care?
You might want to quit while you're ahead, but go ahead.
Oh.
Yeah, Dr. White, this is Janet Clark. I think the committee understands.
Oh, okay, great.
Thank you, though, Dr. White. Appreciate that. Okay, any other questions for experts here, for Rickson Hawker, Rickson Weinreich?
I was going to move the bill.
Okay, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Rickson Hawker, go ahead and do this.
With apologies, I'd like to do a quick wrap-up because I've heard there's criticism in the building that this is a new program, and apparently that's criticism coming from influential places in this building. I'd like to point out, this respectfully is not a new program. We are readdressing how we are dealing with this, with the dental services provided under our existing Medicaid program. And I will paraphrase my good friend Representative Stoltz, who I think put it best. In our current program deals strictly with its management by crisis. We deal only with deferred maintenance problems. This is moving, getting ahead of the ball game and doing readjusting our program towards preventive maintenance rather than relying totally on deferred maintenance. And, again, with the particular having a sunset, the hard sunset here, we're going to be able to see if this actually works. I mean, can we deal with that very expensive recurring deferred maintenance by an investment of preventive maintenance dollars? And, intuitively, we should be getting a great deal of service delivery for this. So, respectfully, that this is not a new program. We're reassessing, reworking the way we're dealing with an existing program. And that hardwired $1,150 cap is absolutely unique to this program. No other program that I'm aware of in the Medicaid services arena has a hard dollar cap on it. And believe me, when this bill came out originally, it did not have the hardwired cap, it did not have the sunset, and it was not as thoroughly leveraged. And I didn't support the bill at that time, but only with these three provisions am I able to support the bill. But at that, I think it's a truly an innovative and appropriate way to take the state forward as a matter of policy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you, Mr. Hawker. Anything else?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. Since I want to make sure that the folks that did a good job of presenting this aren't reading my comments as negative to the program, I couldn't be more sympathetic with the need for the care required. What I am concerned about is the sustainability at the Hess level of this constant addition. We don't seem to get any testimony to take anything away, and I suppose that's understandable. Didn't have any here, and I sat through what we had 3 days on the budget. Didn't get a single request for takeaway. and we just keep adding. We seem not to be able to say no, and this doesn't look like one that we're going to want to say no to either, but it is a serious problem when we've got things like a $7 billion unfunded public employee and teacher unfunded liability, where we obviously didn't guess where that one was going very well. A lot of reasons for that, but we didn't figure that one out very well, and we're in a real pickle over it. We've got a HES budget that's going up, in spite of the cuts that were mentioned. It's going up at a rate that's headed for the moon. This probably won't mitigate that circumstance. And I just want to weigh in as understanding and appreciating the presentation here, but being very concerned about the sustainability of this budget. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. Okay, if there's no other comments, Representative Waller, I take your motion to be approved.
Chairman, I move CS for House Bill number 105, Finance, as amended with attached fiscal notes and attached committee letter of intent to the individual recommendations.
Okay, any questions? Bill passes that committee. Okay, thank you, everybody, for your comments and so on. Helping us get through this bill. It's a big bill, and that is a
good one nonetheless. You know, this is.
Okay, before everybody leaves, again, I know it's been a long day. We started here since, we've been here since 8:30, but we will meet again tomorrow. Tomorrow we start at 9 o'clock. So. 9 o'clock, and again, we'll be taking up bills tomorrow. Again, we're trying to position ourselves so that after we come back from Easter break, and Easter break starts Thursday, that we won't have much time after that. So, trying to get through some of the bills, we'll be taking up the student base or base student allocation increase. That's House Bill 362, and then the overtime for registered nurses. We had started that and was not able to. Finish that. That's House Bill 271, and then we'll be taking up House Bill 51. That's in the morning, and then we'll continue with bills that afternoon. There's no PPT tomorrow, as we, the co-chairman here, co-chairman Schnultz, trying to get a hold of the consultants and work around their schedules, which is difficult. I have a note here, though, that the consultant Daniel Johnson is available on Sunday. And he still plans on meeting on Sunday, and will be joined by the Senate Finance. So tomorrow we'll have bills in the morning, afternoon. Sunday then we'll go back to PPT. Okay. Anything else come for committee? Just make sure you sign the
130 bill
sheet here, and with that we're adjourned until tomorrow. Give the coffee.